And welcome back to the NAGB's Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm your host for this evening. And don't forget that if you're interested in this conversation, if you missed Marielle giving out the address, which she will give again later in the segment, and you want to listen to the show again, all of the shows for Blank Canvas are archived on the NAGB's website. You go to www.nagb.org.bs. You go to the Learn menu, Adult and Public Programs, and you can find the Blank Canvas tab there. And you can listen not only to last week's shows, but you can really listen to all of the shows over the past. Like, if we've been doing the show for 10 years. I don't think they're all archived, but probably about the last 5 to 6 years are archived. And so it's actually a great resource. And of course, you can go back there to pick up some information. You can share it with a friend. And so go and do that. Also, while you're on the NAGB's website, you can just cruise around and see what they have on show, what's upcoming. Of course, I reiterate this on every show. The NAGB is free for everybody living in the Bahamas. So if you are Bahamian or non-Bahamian but living here, you get to go for free to the National Institution, and you only pay if you're a tourist. So there's no reason not to go, and there's a lot of really great shows on. And as Marielle was referring to just before the break, you know, art can just be very pretty, and you can just go there for a nice afternoon to look at some pretty things, but it can also be a great space to just spend time in front of one work and think about an issue or start a conversation with somebody in your family about an issue. I've seen that happen in the museum. I've seen, you know, parents and children, or teachers and children, or two kids or two grown-ups in front of an artwork that speaks to something, and finding that space to then discuss that and share about it, or discuss it in a way that is kind of like non-confrontational, which is such a great thing about art, is that it can get into your brain and allow you to like open up passages for consideration that maybe you thought were closed. And so, you know, going to art spaces, looking at art is a really great way to just see other worldviews sometimes and allow for different points of view. So this particular biennial that the Caribbean Development Bank put on, called Statelessness, is really important because, again, it's dealing with this very important issue. Specifically now for Sonia's project, we're talking about the issue for Bahamians, but of course it's a big issue for the region. So Sonia, you were talking a little bit about your project, which it was interviewing people about how citizenship issues have interrupted their lives, made their lives complicated. Tell us a little bit more about it and about the kind of art project.
Yeah, and sort of, I think, too, affected their identity. So the name of the project, I didn't say before.
No, I said it to you in the interview, and we just had a vote here. And I'm so happy when we have a referendum or a vote, because I get to make my thumb purple. And I never clean it. And everyone's like, why aren't you using bleach to take that off? It's the one time I can walk around and everybody immediately identifies me as a Bahamian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that ties into the name of the project, which is Indelible. And, you know, Indelible refers to, like you said, Amanda, the quality of the ink that that can't be washed off, right? For when you do, and there's a voting process of people around the world use it. And there's even indelible ink that is like ultraviolet, so it doesn't stain your hand, but you can see it under a light. But okay, we still use the one that stains, you know, your thumb. So it's a tool to make sure that there's no electoral fraud, but it's also
I just think that is so symbolic and on so many levels, right? That, you know, who we are cannot be erased that easily, right? Who we are stains, who we are, you know, whether you try to take it away from us or not, it is there, it remains, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It is in our print, literally.
Right.
So I think this project is so important because there's a visual representation that is being made known to this often invisible thing, right? And then it's being circulated in a way that is perhaps the legal framework doesn't allow it to circulate, you know? So it's there's so many kind of potential levels to the way that you're doing the project, Sonia. And I think that is the capacity of art to communicate on multiple levels and to, you know, to attract person's attention and understanding so that they can then act on something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You don't know below the levels on which they are understanding it or interacting with it. And perhaps they just needed this thing to trigger something else. And so this, you know, the work that you're doing, Sonia, I just want to reiterate, is so powerful and so meaningful. And the fact that you're coming to it from, you know, bringing all these different, you know, kind of sectors to bear on it. So it's journalism, it's art, it's printing, right? You know, that's critical. It's just critical. It's gender, you know?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it is like a very multifaceted project. And I am finding like more and more that my work finds itself in this kind of intersectional space that I'm really quite excited about. I mean, as a book artist, that's already quite intersectional, but I'm trying to expand more and more into like digital realm. So, you know, all of my work is done under my press, basically Poinciana Paper Press, through which I work with writers and artists to advance cultural ownership and voice in Caribbean narratives. So I'm trying to like diversify, you know, the Caribbean narratives in art and literature, and to help us like, you know, redirect the gaze, right? And that often takes the form of the book, but more and more I'm thinking like, how can publishing be like a socially engaged practice that might not necessarily result in like a hard copy book, you know? And I think that Indelible, this project, this oral history archive, is one of these kind of more like a digital project, publishing project, you know, that involves a lot of community voices and contributions. Yeah.
Speak to Amanda's point as well. That was one of the criteria, right? That was one of the criteria, you know, for that we put out to the executing agencies to come on board, that community orientation. And so, you know, especially the ICE project really, you know, helped push this grant into the forefront, push this project into the forefront, because their whole practice is very community oriented, very sustainable. And so these were all of the criteria that we put forward, that we said, look, we want this to be multidimensional. We want this to show that art can, is not just the painting or the sculpture that you think art is. Art is so much more than that. And if we engage on all of those levels, our societies might be a different place.
Yeah, I agree. Like a really big amount of like social engagement in the art making practice. And this project, I mean, I have to say, like, I know I'm on the show talking about the project, but I'm definitely feeling more and more like just a facilitator or a producer, because I'm bringing on, like, this is such a richly collaborative project. It's turned into so many folks, and really like the grant that I got from SIFF, I'm just really utilizing to give honorariums to people who are helping me. So there's honorariums provided to people who talk to me and give me their oral history or their testimony, as they say. And then also to people who are helping me make this other section of the project, which is this educational framework. And it's still in process. So we're still working it out towards a launch on December 10th. So I don't want to like drop a bunch of names and put people on the spot already, but I do want to say that I am working with folks in policymaking and advocacy and scholarship, as well as visual artists and folks in website design, to create this like multi-experience free website or digital platform. So there will be like an interactive translation of the Bahamian Constitution, a citizenship quiz, an interactive flowchart showing pathways to documentation, an illustrated comic series on the definition of islands. Yeah, faith-based workshops on statelessness, and maybe even more. And the project I'm hoping, like, this has allowed me to really like lean into the idea that I've had like on the back burner of my brain for a little while, and it will help me to launch it. But I'm hoping that I can keep it going and keep collecting, you know, these oral histories from people and keep building up resources. Like, you know, I'd really like to interrogate like the coloniality of citizenship. I'd really like to think about like online exhibitions looking at, you know, looking at citizenship issues, or looking at how many of our artists we can't really call. I know, Amanda, you know about this, like the wording is very delicate. You can't say the Bahamian artist, and you'd be surprised to know who is not Bahamian.
The Bahamas or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
New to these like oppressive citizenship issues. And so much more. Like, it's just really rich. I really want to, you know, delve into the fact that like, as Bahamians, we're sort of like living on this borrowed time, like really we're all going to be de facto stateless from climate change. So that is a big very scary, like, conversation to have, but it is a reality, you know, like today you, tomorrow me, you know what I'm saying? So if we don't build like compassion and awareness of the issue of statelessness, like there's 15 million people worldwide who deal with statelessness, and we don't even know the real numbers because states like these are people who are not even recognized as people. So we have almost no data.
Which actually was so glaringly apparent during the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian, where the count of who died didn't include people that weren't like registered. So we all know hundreds, if not thousands, but I think definitely hundreds of stateless individuals were washed away and lost their lives. And they're not included in the official count because they were not officially here.
Right.
And this is it's shameful. It's completely shameful. The way that citizenship operates in this country is super shameful. And the only way that we can have a conversation about how to deal with statelessness or even improve like discriminatory laws is just to make citizenship more inclusive. This is the bottom line. You know, this is it. Like there's no, we could make these processes and whatever. And by the way, the processes towards citizenship in the Bahamas are not transparent at all, which is why it's able to be like lost in bureaucracy and politics. And all of the people I speak to, every single person speaks to me about that. Yeah. Every single person. And it stands in direct opposition to what the government says about how citizenship is a transparent process, or there's only like 12 stateless people. Was that the statement? I just can't. So no,
I just want
to, that is not true.
Sorry, Mariel.
Yeah, I just want to take us back as well to one register that your work is dealing with, Sonia, and that is the whole aspect of oral histories. And oral history is a really important method or really important mode for the Caribbean. And by paying for the oral histories, you are, you know, it's this whole legitimization of that mode, right? Which is oftentimes ignored or kind of repressed because we don't have enough capture of that as an academic format. And by one, paying the persons who are delivering these oral histories for you and recording them in meaningful ways, you are, you know, there's a bigger level. You know, there's a level on which you're performing in terms of that work. So
yeah, it's a visibility making project.
Too much, because I don't want to make it about money, but I think it was really important to say that. And Sonia also gives participants the possibility to donate their money. So, and you know, in some people's cases, like my own, I donated the money to another cause. But the idea that someone is actually offering to pay you for your knowledge, basically, is really important, because especially in our industry, I can't tell you how many times someone's like, oh, can you just write something for me? Can you just knock something out? And it's like, that is work. What we do is work. And actually, even if you are just a citizen sharing your experience, the knowledge you have on that part of what you're doing is work. And so I think it's really important that this grant has allowed Sonia to offer to pay people for their time and for their expertise.
Well, because some people who speak to me, they're going to need bus fare, they're going to need childcare fare, like whatever, you know. And on top of that, a lot of folks are talking to me about things that are sort of like very difficult and traumatic for them to revisit. And I mean, there's a split in like people who do conduct oral histories. A lot of folks are adamant that you shouldn't give honorariums or monetary compensation for it. And other people think you should. I'm just in the should camp, so there is a debate out there.
My sister works in advertising and marketing. And in advertising and marketing, whenever you're doing like, you know, you get groups together to ask them about, how do you like this hair care product? And, you know, those people are paid, they're compensated for their time.
Right.
And I understand that it concerns people, because then maybe someone's going to say they have an expertise when they don't. So it just means you have to vet people properly, or they're going to perform somehow. But again, I think it is important to pay people for their time.
And that comes into the whole idea of what we call community scholarship and recognizing that community scholarship.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Community leaders who, if you don't talk to them, you really have no idea about what the actual status of affairs is in that context, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, they're not necessarily as respected as someone who has the paperwork or the degree or the, you know, the whatever else that puts them on that higher level.
The PhD.
So this whole notion of community scholarship and respecting you know, respecting persons equally is really, really critical, I think, to the work that you're doing as well.
Right. It's about not doing work for a community, but doing work with a community. This is the difference. And I'm trying to really, like, I am doing a lot of learning, especially over the past couple of years, but through this project, like thinking about how can my press work with a community? Like, what is needed? And visibility is like the biggest thing, but I don't want to be like dropping into a community, taking what I need, like, thanks for the oral history, I'm out. And then benefiting from that for my personal like gain right. as an artist. Like, so this is why I'm, you know, first of all, giving the honorarium is like recognizing that, like, thank you, you have taken the time to tell me your embodied knowledge, you know, how you uniquely know something, your lived experience, and how that contributes to this like larger visibility of this issue of yeah. of citizenship, you know, oppression in our country. And then on top of that too, like how can that work like then benefit this community of disenfranchised people? And this is why I'm also building the educational resources. Like, how can this, you know, help?
Okay, I just want to, you know, have a disclaimer here that, you know, while we give grants for persons to develop independent work, the work is not necessarily the views of the bank. So I just want to make that clear, because Sadia is making a lot of things that are her artistic, you know, that are her artistic perspectives, right?
Yeah, sure.
So are facilitating work
You're facilitating dialogue. And so again, like it's like same with the radio show, right? I mean, again, before the show airs, like 15 times a day on Guardian Radio, it says, you know, the Guardian Radio doesn't normally subscribe to the views of the hosts and guests. But I think to have the platform is so important. That's why public radio became so important in this country, talk radio. For a long time, we only had one station and it was the government station. And now we have these stations where we can have this dialogue. So I think the bank is doing the same thing and should be commended for that. The bank might not agree with all of the opinions but it's allowing for people to explore. And it's important to create spaces where you can have a respectful dialogue. And just yesterday I was in a chat group and, you know, we had pro and anti-vax conversations, but it was a really respectful conversation. At the end of it, we were like, you know, good for us for having this conversation. And I think creating those environments is really important. And I think Marielle, in your position as the coordinator for SIF, you know, you're a key part of that. So I think bravo to the bank for doing that, for allowing that. So we've got a couple of minutes left. So why don't you both just give us key points. Marielle, give us the address. Sonia, finish what. Tell us what we need to know about your thing. And
sure. I actually just wanted to add to this last point, which is that like these conversations, like these oral histories that I am gathering, like root themselves in the understanding that identity is multifaceted, intersectional, and complex, and that citizenship, especially in the Bahamas, can and is used as a tool of oppression. Hate speech is not tolerated in this project or in the course of any interviews. Like, it is a humanistic, progressive project that I'm hoping will grow like awareness and compassion for this, and then also help us to understand the very critical need to adjust our laws to protect every single Bahamian's birthright to belonging and safety in this country. If people are interested, you can find me on Facebook, Sonia Farmer, and send me a message if you would like to be included in the project. Let
Great.
Me know.
Sonia Farmer on Facebook, Poinciana Paper Press. And Marielle, summarize the bank's goal and what you got coming up and how to contact you.
So we really, as a cultural fund, we really emphasize the transversality of the arts, meaning how the arts intersect with a range of other, industries, from urban planning to education to psychology to environmental sustainability. And so the biennial was really exemplary of this transversal nature of the arts as citizen practice, as the arts as, you know, directed towards advancing causes and so on. And our SIF community of practice will provide resources that support all of these agendas in terms of intellectual property understanding, right? So we've created intellectual property toolkits for festivals and carnivals and for Indigenous fashion, and we hope to create one for the visual arts as well. And these areas are really, really critical in supporting the work that our artists in the region, creative practitioners in the region do. So we invite persons to subscribe to our databases, and you can email us at cif@caribbank.org, caribank.org. to and we'll share the information to subscribe to our databases so that you can avail yourself of these resources. Thank you.
No, you're so welcome. Thank you for your time. You've both been amazing. I always wish we had another hour because we could get even more deeply into it. But again, both of the women have passed on their information. So get in touch. If you didn't get time to write it down, listen to the show again or contact, go to info@nagb.com. Write to someone there. They'll be able to pass on information. And I just want to thank everybody for listening and for both of you for the hard work you're doing. So thank you so much for joining us on NHB's Blank Canvas. Thank you for listening, the show in which we talk about visual culture and creative community. I've been your host for this evening. I'm Amanda Coulson, and I very much hope you tune in next Wednesday night at 6:30 to listen to the Blank Canvas on Guardian Talk Radio 96.9 FM. Thank you so much for listening and have a great night.